Elfhelm's Eorid came next, and now Merry noticed that Durnhelm had left his place and in the darkness was moving steadily forward, until at last he was riding just in rear of the king's guard. There came a check. Merry heard voices in front speaking softly. Outriders had come back who had ventured forward almost to the wall. They came to the king.
"There are great fires, lord," said one.
"The city is all set about with flame, and the field is all full of foes, but all seem drawn off to the assault. As well as we could guess, there are few left upon the outwall, and they are heedless, busy in destruction."
"Do you remember the wild man's words, lord?" said another. "I live upon the open wold in days of peace. Weedfarer is my name, and to me also the air brings messages. Already the wind is turning. There comes a breath out of the south. There is a sea tang in it, faint though it be. The morning will bring new things. About the reek it will be dawn when you pass the wall."
"If you speak truly, Weedfarer, then may you live beyond this day in years of blessedness," said Théoden. He turned to the men of his household who were near, and he spoke now in a clear voice, so that many also of the riders of the first Eorid heard them.
"Now is the hour come, riders of the Mark, sons of Eol. Foes and fire are before you, and your homes far behind. Yet, though you fight upon an alien field, the glory that you reap there shall be your own forever. Oaths ye have taken, now fulfill them all, to lord and land and league of friendship."
Men clashed spear upon shield.
"Eomer, my son, you lead the first Eorid," said Théoden, "and it shall go behind the king's banner in the center. Elfhelm, lead your company to the right when we pass the wall, and Grimbold shall lead his towards the left. Let the other companies behind follow these three that lead, as they have chance. Strike wherever the enemy gathers. Other plans we cannot make, for we know not yet how things stand upon the field. Forth now, and fear no darkness."
The leading company rode off as swiftly as they could, for it was still deep dark, whatever change Weedfarer might forebode. Merry was riding behind Durnhelm, clutching with the left hand, while with the other he tried to loosen his sword in its sheath. He felt now bitterly the truth of the old king's words, "In such a battle, what would you do, Meriadoc?" "Just this," he thought. "Encumber a rider, and hope at best to stay in my seat and not be pounded to death by galloping hooves." It was no more than a league to where the outwalls had stood. They soon reached them, too soon for Merry. Wild cries broke out, and there was some clash of arms, but it was brief. The orcs busy about the walls were few and amazed, and they were quickly slain or driven off. Before the ruin of the north gate in the Ramas, the king halted again. The first Eorid drew up behind him and about him on either side. Durnhelm kept close to the king, though Elfhelm's company was away on the right. Grimbold's men turned aside and passed round to a great gap in the wall further eastward. Merry peered from behind Durnhelm's back. Far away, maybe 10 miles or more, there was a great burning, but between it and the riders lines of fire blazed in a vast crescent, at the nearest point less than a league distant. He could make out little more on the dark plain, and as yet he neither saw any hope of morning, nor felt any wind, changed or unchanged. Now silently the host of Rohan moved forward into the field of Gondor, pouring in slowly but steadily, like the rising tide through breaches in a dike that men have thought secure. But the mind and will of the black captain was bent wholly on the falling city, and as yet no tidings came to him warning that his designs held any flaw. After a while the king led his men away, somewhat eastward, to come between the fires of the siege and the outer fields. Still they were unchallenged, and still Théoden gave no signal. At last he halted once again. The city was now nearer. A smell of burning was in the air, and a very shadow of death. The horses were uneasy. But the king sat upon Snowmane, motionless, gazing upon the agony of Minas Tirith, as if stricken suddenly by anguish or by dread. He seemed to shrink down, cowed by age. Merry himself felt as if a great weight of horror and doubt had settled on him. His heart beat slowly. Time seemed poised in uncertainty. They were too late. Too late was worse than never. Perhaps Théoden would quail, bow his old head, turn, slink away to hide in the hills. Then suddenly Merry felt it at last, beyond doubt, a change. Wind was in his face. Light was glimmering. Far, far away in the south, the clouds could be dimly seen as remote grey shapes rolling up, drifting. Morning lay beyond them. But at that same moment there was a flash, as if lightning had sprung from the earth beneath the city. For a searing second it stood dazzling far off in black and white, its topmost tower like a glittering needle, and then, as the darkness closed again, there came rolling over the fields a great boom. At that sound the bent shape of the king sprang suddenly erect. Tall and proud he seemed again, and rising in his stirrups, he cried in a loud voice, more clear than any there had ever heard a mortal man achieve before, "Arise! Arise! Riders of Théoden! Fell deeds awake! Fire and slaughter! Spear shall be shaken, shield be splintered, a sword day, a red day, ere the sun rises! Right now! Right now! Ride to Gondor!" With that he seized a great horn from Guthlaf, his banner-bearer, and he blew such a blast upon it that it burst asunder, and straightway all the horns in the host were lifted up in music, and the blowing of the horns of Rohan in that hour was like a storm upon the plain and a thunder in the mountains. "Ride now! Ride now! Ride to Gondor!" Suddenly the king cried to Snowmane, and the horse sprang away. Behind him his banner blew in the wind, white horse upon a field of green, but he outpaced it. After him thundered the knights of his house, but he was ever before them. Aelmer rode there, the white horse tail on his helm floating in his speed, and the front of the first Eorid roared like a breaker foaming to the shore, but Théoden could not be overtaken. Fey he seemed, or the battle-fury of his fathers ran like new fire in his veins, and he was borne up on Snowmane like a god of old, even as Orome, the great, in the battle of the Valar when the world was young. His golden shield was uncovered, and lo, it shone like an image of the sun, and the grass flamed to green about the white feet of his steed. For morning came, morning and a wind from the sea, and the darkness was removed, and the hosts of Mordor wailed, and terror took them, and they fled, and died, and the hooves of wrath rode over them. And then all the host of Rohan burst into song, and they sang as they slew, for the joy of battle was on them, and the sound of their singing that was fair and terrible came even to the city. Chapter 6 The Battle of the Pelennor Fields. But it was no orc chieftain or brigand that led the assault upon Gondor. The darkness was breaking too soon, before the date that his master had set for it. Fortune had betrayed him for the moment, and the world had turned against him. Victory was slipping from his grasp, even as he stretched out his hand to seize it. But his arm was long. He was still in command, wielding great powers. King, Ringwraith, Lord of the Nazgul, he had many weapons. he left the gate and vanished. Theoden, king of the Mark, had reached the road from the gate to the river, and he turned towards the city that was now less than a mile distant. He slackened his speed a little, seeking new foes, and his knights came about him, and Daernhelm was with them. Ahead, near the walls, Elfhelm's men were among the siege engines, hewing, slaying, driving their foes into the fire pits. Well nigh all the northern half of the Pelennor was overrun, and their camps were blazing. Orcs were flying towards the river like herds before the hunters, and the Rohirrim went hither and thither at their will. But they had not yet overthrown the siege, nor won the gate. Many foes stood before it, and on the further half of the plain were other hosts, still unfought. Southward beyond the road lay the main force of the Haradrim, and there their horsemen were gathered about the standard of their chieftain. And he looked out, and in the growing light he saw the banner of the king, and that it was far ahead of the battle with few men about it. Then he was filled with a red wrath, and shouted aloud, and displaying his standard, black serpent upon scarlet, he came against the white horse and the green with great press of men, and the drawing of the scimitars of the Southrons was like a glitter of stars. Then Theoden was aware of him, and would not wait for his onset. But crying to Snowmane, he charged headlong to greet him. Great was the clash of their meeting, but the white fury of the Northmen burned the hotter, and more skilled was their knighthood with long spears and bitter. Fewer were they, but they clove through the Southrons like a firebolt in a forest. Right through the press drove Theoden, Thingol's son, and his spear was shivered as he threw down their chieftain. Out swept his sword, and he spurred to the standard, hewed staff and bearer, and the black serpent foundered. Then all that was left unslain of their cavalry turned and fled far away. But lo, suddenly in the midst of the glory of the king his golden shield was dimmed. The new morning was blotted from the sky. Dark fell about him. Horses reared and screamed. Men cast from the saddle lay grovelling on the ground.
"To me! To me!" cried Theoden. "Up, Eorlingus! Fear no darkness!"
But Snowmane, wild with terror, stood up on high, fighting with the air, and then with a great scream he crashed upon his side. A black dart had pierced him. The king fell beneath him. The great shadow descended like a falling cloud, and behold, it was a winged creature. If bird, then greater than all other birds, and it was naked, and neither quill nor feather did it bear, and its vast pinions were as webs of hide between horned fingers, and it stank. A creature of an older world, maybe it was, whose kind, lingering in forgotten mountains, cold beneath the moon, outstayed their day, and in hideous airy bred this last untimely brood, apt to evil. And the Dark Lord took it, and nursed it with fell meats, until it grew beyond the measure of all other things that fly, and he gave it to his servant to be his steed. Down, down it came, and then, folding its fingered webs, it gave a croaking cry, and settled upon the body of Snowmane, digging in its claws, stooping its long, naked neck. Upon it sat a shape, black-mantled, huge and threatening. A crown of steel he bore, but between rim and robe naught was there to see, save only a deadly gleam of eyes. The Lord of the Nazgul. To the air he had returned, summoning his steed ere the darkness failed, and now he was come again, bringing ruin, turning hope to despair, and victory to death. A great black mace he wielded. But Theoden was not utterly forsaken. The knights of his house lay slain about him, or else, mastered by the madness of their steeds, were borne far away. Yet one stood there still. Daernhelm the young, faithful beyond fear, and he wept, for he had loved his lord as a father. Right through the charge, Merry had been borne unharmed behind him, until the shadow came, and then Windfaller had thrown them in his terror, and now ran wild upon the plain. Merry crawled on all fours like a dazed beast, and such a horror was on him that he was blind and sick. "King's man, King's man," his heart cried within him, "you must stay by him. As a father you shall be to me," you said. But his will made no answer, and his body shook. He dared not open his eyes or look up. Then out of the blackness in his mind, he thought that he heard Dairnhelm speaking. Yet now the voice seemed strange, recalling some other voice that he had known. "Begone, foul Dwimmerlake, lord of Carrion, leave the dead in peace." A cold voice answered, "Come not between the Nazgul and his prey, or he will not slay thee in thy turn. He will bear thee away to the houses of lamentation beyond all darkness, where thy flesh shall be devoured, and thy shriveled mind be left naked to the lidless eye." A sword rang as it was drawn. "Do what you will, but I will hinder it, if I may."
"Hinder me, thou fool! No living man may hinder me."
Then Merry heard of all sounds in that hour the strangest. It seemed that Dairnhelm laughed, and the clear voice was like the ring of steel. "But no living man am I. You look upon a woman. Eowyn I am, Eomund's daughter. You stand between me and my lord and kin. Begone, if you be not deathless, for living or dark undead, I will smite you if you touch him." The winged creature screamed at her, but the ringwraith made no answer, and was silent, as if in sudden doubt. Very amazement for a moment conquered Merry's fear. He opened his eyes, and the blackness was lifted from them. There, some paces from him, sat the great beast, and all seemed dark about it, and above it loomed the Nazgul lord like a shadow of despair. A little to the left, facing them, stood she whom he had called Dairnhelm, but the helm of her secrecy had fallen from her, and her bright hair, released from its bonds, gleamed with pale gold upon her shoulders. Her eyes, grey as the sea, were hard and fell, and yet tears were on her cheek. A sword was in her hand, and she raised her shield against the horror of her enemy's eyes. Eowyn it was, and Dairnhelm also, for into Merry's mind flashed the memory of the face that he saw at the riding from Dunharrow, the face of one that goes seeking death, having no hope. Pity filled his heart, and great wonder, and suddenly the slow, kindled courage of his race awoke. He clenched his hand. She should not die, so fair, so desperate. At least she should not die alone, unaided. The face of their enemy was not turned towards him, but still he hardly dared to move, dreading lest the deadly eyes should fall on him. Slowly, slowly he began to crawl aside, but the black captain, in doubt and malice intent upon the woman before him, heeded him no more than a worm in the mud. Suddenly the great beast beat its hideous wings, and the wind of them was foul. Again it leapt into the air, and then swiftly fell down upon Eowyn, shrieking, striking with beak and claw. Still she did not blench. Maiden of the Rohirrim, child of kings, slender but as a steel blade, fair but terrible. A swift stroke she dealt, skilled and deadly. The outstretched neck she clove asunder, and the hewn head fell like a stone. Backward she sprang, as the huge shape crashed to ruin, vast wings outspread, crumpled on the earth, and with its fall the shadow passed away. A light fell about her, and her hair shone in the sunrise. Out of the wreck rose the black rider, tall and threatening, towering above her. With a cry of hatred that stung the very ears like venom, he let fall his mace. Her shield was shivered in many places, and her arm was broken. She stumbled to her knees. He bent over her like a cloud, and his eyes glittered. He raised his mace to kill. But suddenly he too stumbled forward with a cry of bitter pain, and his stroke went wide, driving into the ground. Mary's sword had stabbed him from behind, shearing through the black mantle, and passing up beneath the hauberk, had pierced the sinew behind his mighty knee. "Eowyn! Eowyn!" cried Mary. Then, tottering, struggling up, with her last strength she drove her sword between crown and mantle as the great shoulders bowed before her. The sword broke sparkling into many shards. The crown rolled away with a clang. Eowyn fell forward upon her fallen foe. But lo! The mantle and hauberk were empty. Shapeless they lay now on the ground, torn and tumbled, and a cry went up into the shuddering air and faded to a shrill wailing, passing with the wind, a voice bodiless and thin that died and was swallowed up and was never heard again in that age of this world. And there stood Meriadoc the hobbit in the midst of the slain, blinking like an owl in the daylight, for tears blinded him. And through a mist he looked on Eowyn's fair head, as she lay and did not move. And he looked on the face of the king, fallen in the midst of his glory. For Snowmane in his agony had rolled away from him again, yet he was the bane of his master. Then Merry stooped and lifted his hand to kiss it, and lo! Theoden opened his eyes, and they were clear, and he spoke in a quiet voice, though labored.
"Farewell, Master Holbitler," he said. "My body is broken. I go to my father's, and even in their mighty company I shall not now be ashamed. I felled the black serpent, a grim morn, and a glad day, and a golden sunset."
Merry could not speak, but wept anew.
"Forgive me, Lord," he said at last, "if I broke your command, and yet have done no more in your service than to weep at our parting."
The old king smiled.
"Grieve not, it is forgiven. Great heart will not be denied. Live now in blessedness, and when you sit in peace with your pipe, think of me. For never now shall I sit with you in Meadowseld, as I promised, or listen to your herb lore."
He closed his eyes, and Merry bowed beside him. Presently he spoke again.
"Where is Eomer? For my eyes darken, and I would see him ere I go. He must be king after me, and I would send word to Eowyn. She would not have me leave her, and now I shall not see her again. Dearer than daughter."
"Lord, Lord," began Merry brokenly, "she is—"
But at that moment there was a great clamour, and all about them horns and trumpets were blowing. Merry looked round. He had forgotten the war, and all the world beside, and many hours it seemed since the king rode to his fall, though in truth it was only a little while. But now he saw that they were in danger of being caught in the very midst of the great battle that would soon be joined. New forces of the enemy were hastening up the road from the river, and from under the walls came the legions of Morgul, and from the southward fields came footmen of Harad, with horsemen before them, and behind them rose the huge backs of the Mumakil, with war towers upon them. But northward the white crest of Eomer led the great front of the Rohirrim, which he had again gathered and marshalled, and out of the city came all the strength of men that was in it, and the silver swan of Dal Amroth was borne in the van, driving the enemy from the gate.